welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Everybody, this is Barney Leventino at Syosset Library, and welcome to Turn the Page, our official podcast. And I'm really happy today to welcome international best-selling author Jeffrey Deaver. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you, Barney. Good to be with you.
Actually, this is welcome back for you. You and I had a chance to talk back in 2019 when you introduced the Colter Shaw series.
Oh, that was the Never Game, right?
The Never Game, correct.
Yeah. I thought you looked familiar.
Yeah. But it's good to be back now with Lincoln Rhyme. This is the newest installment in the series. The book is The Midnight Lock, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And actually, logistically, it came in kind of late, so I plowed through it in a day. And it was a lot of fun. Enjoyed the book. Tell us a little bit about this newest installment.
Sure. I'll back up a little bit. What I try to do for my readers, and we've talked about this before, but what I try to do for my readers is tell a really fast-paced roller coaster. You know, the books take place, all of mine take place over about 2 days, 3 days, maybe tops. Right. Lots of twists and turns, reversals, big surprise endings. So that's the schematic of a Jeffrey Deaver book. But then I also try to find a hook, something that's a little bit different. I can do some research, teach readers something. And the hook in this book was locks. And I don't mean these, locks that you turn on with your, the e-locks you turn on with your smartphone and so forth. You know, 13-year-old kids can hack those. I mean real locks. I mean the metal things that go back thousands of years. I locked myself out a few years ago of my house. A locksmith comes, you know, 10 seconds, it's open. I thought, well, two things. Good, I'm back in my house. My dogs were upset I was locked out. It was dinner time. And number two, I had the idea for my next book. And to make a long story very short, the villain in this book, the Lincoln Rhyme and Amelia Sachs book, The Midnight Lock, number 15, the villain is psychotic, but he's also an ace lock picker. He can get through any lock ever invented. And he does that, and he breaks into people's apartment late at night, but he doesn't kill them. You think serial killer? No, he doesn't kill them, doesn't hurt them, doesn't touch them. He rearranges things and then leaves. Freaks them out, of course, does a lot of psychological damage. But the police think something else is going on here. And indeed it is. Lincoln Rhyme and Amelia get on the case. And the rest of the book is a cat and mouse chase with them trying to pursue the locksmith, and maybe people working with the locksmith doing all sorts of other evil things.
Also, the book has several storylines going at once. There are at least three distinct investigations that are going on during the course of the book, which was interesting in itself. But beyond the investigations, the plot of the book touches on some issues that are really, really germane nowadays. Social media plays a big part in the storyline. The manipulation of news and the dissemination of news plays a significant part. How do you speak to that part of what's going on the world where people are gathering their news from sources that, you know, you've heard it before, you talk about echo chambers, where people are listening to news that's telling them what they really want to hear rather than really what the true news is.
Exactly. I went to journalism school, the University of Missouri, and I worked as a journalist for a while. I subscribe to the New York Times, the Washington Post. I read the New Yorker, the Wall Street Journal. These are sources that are, maybe the editorial board has a leaning one way or the other, but the news, very independent of the editorial side. This is the practice of journalism, and journalism is craftspeople who check multiple sources. They fact check. They present the truth, not the truth as we see it. It's the truth as it is, or they don't present it. Well, I like my books to be about a little bit more than just the crime. There are usually, as you point out, maybe three, sometimes four subplots going along. And some of those subplots are what I call the soap opera element, personal personal things, such as the one character who's he's coming, he was a cop, but now he's kind of trying to reconstruct his life. And that's a soap opera element. But then there's also the geopolitical issues. And that's one of them is this, the fake news element. But they all come together at the end. That's what I love about, you know, writing crime fiction. We are allowed, in fact, we crime authors are encouraged to have these subplots that keep the pot boiling so that even when it looks like the crime is solved, wait a minute, I've got 30 more pages to go. What's going on? Well, maybe there's that media subplot, maybe that social media subplot going on, maybe the legal defense subplot. Lincoln Rhyme gets into a lot of trouble in court. Maybe that's going to be resolved. So I did an interview once and I thought it was going to be a softball interview. They were just going to say, oh, here's the author, talk about your book. No, the guy pointed a finger at me and he said, Mr. Deaver, what do you say to the charge that you're manipulative in your writing? And I said, thank you.
Isn't that your job?
Of course. Of course. That's my job. Yeah.
When we talked last, we were talking about you had just introduced Coulter Shaw. And in the course of our conversation, I actually went back and listened again to the podcast. I kind of talked a little bit and I asked you about some really differences between the two characters in that Coulter Shaw is really focused on the people involved in the crimes. Lincoln has always been really the scientist and he's focused on the minutia, on the evidence, on the physicality of what's going on. And you just touched upon one of the characters, Lyle Spencer, who comes in, and Lincoln kind of makes an observation about him that is the type of observation. Now, I don't want to give too much away of the plot, but it's the kind of thing that you would expect really Amelia to be picking up on more than Lincoln in terms of something going on within this character. And I thought that was a little bit, it was interesting, but it was a little outside the box, so to speak, for Lincoln to make that observation versus Amelia.
Yeah. And in fact, Lincoln almost does a double take, like, oh, my God, what have I thought? This is something that's more akin to her. But of course, now the couple is married, you know, and as they say, couples sometimes grow somewhat closer personality wise over the years. And that may have happened. Of course, she is an ace crime scene searcher, too. But she is really the people cop, as Spencer is as well. And Lincoln, however, does make that observation, which turns out to be quite telling and true. And I mean, Spencer, I liked him as a character. He's quite interesting.
He really was interesting. And from the beginning, I was like, there's something about this guy that I really kind of like. And I hope he hangs around a bit. Lincoln Rhyme has been with us. You've been publishing these books since around 97. And this is now the 15th entry. How does your approach or has your approach to writing these characters changed over the years?
Sure. No, it hasn't. First of all, the technique is the same. As we talked last time, I do a long outline, extensive outline. I plot the whole book out, do the research, and then sit down and write it. That hasn't changed for 30 books. But I'll tell you, and I should say the personalities of Lincoln and Amelia haven't changed either, although, as we alluded to, he maybe has a little softer side occasionally. But one thing I have done is I've gotten away from what I call the soap opera elements, but I mean that affectionately, as someone who appeared on As the World Turns a while ago as a corrupt reporter. I think it was typecasting, but anyway, that's a whole different story. Soap opera elements, I mean, Lincoln's condition, he's a quadriplegic. And in the early books, I wrote more about that condition and his coming to terms with it. But then I decided, and this is based somewhat on fans' reaction, that let's make him a crime solver now. That's his condition. he'll improve to the extent he can improve, and that will happen. But let's get down to the crime solving. So there's less of that. But one thing that has changed, and I'm not going to belabor this in my courses, I talk quite a bit about it, but there's been a change in the attitude of the audience to books. And they are being seduced away to some extent by streaming services. It's easier to watch TV with a remote control in your hand than it is to read a book. But I believe a book is the most emotionally intense creative experience we can have. Come on, let's be honest. You're at the Met, you know, and you're looking at all the pictures. Oh, it's wonderful. Oh, it could be the Opera too, but let's say the Met, you know, the Metropolitan Museum, Fifth Avenue. Okay, you're looking at the pictures. After about a half hour, what are you thinking? Where are we going to go for drinks and dinner afterwards? Or you sit through a symphony and it's like, oh, really long symphony. And, you know, where are we going to go for drinks and dinner afterwards? You go through a movie. Well, that's shorter. So you look at the movie, but you're really watching the directors and the DP, the director of photography's vision there, and they hand it all to you. Or you're on watching the small screen and you're watching, you know, wonderful shows, Only Murders in the Building, Breaking Bad. Those are great. But when they're over with, they don't really stay with you, but a book stays with you. And so that's a long way of saying that I like to keep the readers focused on the book, because they now have this attitude that I want things fast and furious. I want the movie short. I want the scene short. I want dialogue. I write my books that way. My books are shorter. The chapters are shorter. There's more dialogue. There's less introspection. My descriptions are much more concrete rather than abstract. Now, is that seducing people away from Breaking Bad 2 or Better Call Saul? No. I mean, they're both compatible. But if somebody picks up one of my books, I want them to have roughly the same experience as if they're watching that really fast-paced, intense TV show. It's like they're reading a streamed TV series.
You know, as I mentioned, I just because of the logistics involved, I read the book literally in a day, and I experienced the whole roller coaster issue going up and down all day long. But there is something about the experience, the tactile experience of holding the book in your hand, mm-hmm. and you're pointing us through the story, you're telling us the story, but a lot of the story then is happening inside our heads, and it makes the experience really a really intimate experience between the author and the reader, at least for me.
Oh, exactly. Well, you know, a few years ago, I think we talked about this. I wrote a James Bond novel. The family of Ian Fleming, who passed away in the 60s, called me up and said, would you write a James Bond novel? Which I did. It was called Carte Blanche, and I really enjoyed it. It was great fun to write. And I was thinking about that experience because I started reading Bond in the 1950s. I was 8 and 9 years old. And, you know, people say, what? The books were quite tame. That was a time when you didn't see explicit romantic scenes and the violence was very subdued. I can still see Bond in my imagination. That was long before Sean Connery. And he wasn't that different from Sean Connery, but I had this very specific image of Bond. I know what M looks like. I know there was no Q. There was no person named Q. There was the Q division that somebody worked for. That was the special services department. And Miss Moneypenny, I picture her, and seeing the movies was kind of jarring to me. But that was the relationship I had with those books. And storytelling, whether you read a book or listen to a book, it's the same thing, creates that connection between the author's vision and our own vision.
In writing these books, when you get this far into a series, your audience is wide. I mean, you have your diehard Lincoln Rhyme fans who are going to go to the book no matter what. And then you have your newer readers who may not be familiar with a particular series. How challenging is that for you as an author to bring somebody into the series that far down the road? Or do you try to write the books as essentially standalones and they work either way?
Yeah, they have to work either way. And that is a challenge. That's a good point. If you over-explain, readers who are familiar, they're not going to put down the book, but they're going to be, oh, let's move on. It'll be a little bit of a speed bump I've introduced, and we authors can never introduce a speed bump to a reader's experience. But then if you don't tell enough, a newer reader will say, well, wait a minute, who are these people? Have they always been married? Well, no, they haven't. How was Lincoln injured? Well, I have to explain that in the book, but you don't want to dwell on it. So it is a challenge. You know, my job is to give readers a fun experience. I don't have a lot of time for authors who say, I don't care about the reader. I write for myself. Well, no, you don't. It's like Procter & Gamble saying, I make toothpaste for myself. No, they don't. You know, you may think liver-flavored toothpaste is a fun idea. Well, no, you don't. You make mint for the audience. I do the same thing. And part of that is judging, well, is this, many things, is this plot going to be too far-fetched? Do I over-explain? Do I not explain enough? Is this scene too violent? Is it not violent enough? And so those are things I have to consider. And one of those things is how much information to give. And, you know, readers are really smart. So generally less is more. They'll figure it out pretty much, but you have to give them some facts to work with a little bit. So I don't need to say that Lincoln Ryan was injured in a subway accident when he himself was searching a crime scene and a beam fell on his neck. All we have to do is say injured at a crime scene before 3 years before the incidents in the bone collector occurred. And that's enough.
You know, you talk about readers being smart. I'm not going to point to myself here, but and in terms of less being more, without identifying the particular author or the series, there's a fairly popular series of sci-fi fantasy books out there that as I plod through them, the story is good. I keep telling myself, I wish this man had a better editor, because there are just literally hundreds of pages that could just come right out. And from my mind as a reader, it would just work so much better. It becomes a chore to get through the book.
Well, I agree, Brian. I am a very impatient person. And one of the reasons I write the books that I do, that take place over 2 days. And, you know, are roller coasters. And I'm very manipulative, as I said, about moving the readers through the book. I end chapters on big question marks and then propel the reader through. But I'm impatient. I have no time for that. And I love Lord of the Rings, and people say, well, that's what? It's a trilogy, probably 1,300, maybe more than that, pages. And I say, but, you know, Tolkien moved the story along. It was very concrete images. The, you know, those winged horsemen were circling around somewhere. There were, who knew when an orc was going to jump out, when a dragon was going to appear. So that kept us going. There were, you know, there are long books that are too short and short books that are too long. It's as simple as that.
When did you begin writing this particular book? I'm going to ask for a reason now.
It was the pandemic. It was probably in the early days of the pandemic. I wrote two books at the same time. The third Cult of Shaw came out in May of this year. That's the final twist. And now we have The Midnight Lock. And I was working on both of those at the same time. So it was at the beginning of the pandemic.
As you were going through that and going through the whole pandemic thing, and I've talked to a couple of other authors about this as well, whether there was any thought of touching on any of that in this book or ignoring it, or how to deal with it, whether to deal with it, why to deal with it. What do you think?
I ignored it. I take it very seriously. I'm vaccinated. I advocate vaccinations. I wear a mask all the time. I advocate wearing masks. My lifestyle is very cognizant of the virus, but I'm an entertainer, and I don't write sociologic texts. Now, I do talk about the media, for instance, in this book, and the dangers of the internet, but that's really to inform the story. It gives me a platform to tell my, I'm like an illusionist. That's a platform for my magic show to trick the readers and get them to move forward. And I don't like, you know, the concept of the fourth wall, of course, is where the author kind of winks, looks to the camera and winks. And That works in some things. I've written a couple short stories that are very meta, that really are take the reader into account directly. But I thought for the pandemic, I want to keep that completely separate. And far better authors than I have written about the pandemic, and I'll let their work stand for me. If you buy into a Deaver book, you're going into a different world that doesn't feature that. It features evil people, but it doesn't feature that, this, you know, kind of exhausting phenomenon that continues to keep on giving, apparently. After our discussion, I'll log on to the New York Times and see what the latest developments are.
No, that's fair. And as I said, I've had the conversation with a couple of different authors, and I've actually had a few say that midstream, they kind of changed the course of their whole storyline because they felt they needed to incorporate it, and everybody approaches it differently. One thing, and again, without giving much away of the storyline and without any spoilers, you alluded to one aspect of the book. There's a trial going on and apparent error that Lincoln might have made during the course of that trial. And again, addressing the plausibility of some of the story. One thing that kind of irked me was the DA's approach to that particular situation and whether or not that might have been handled in that particular fashion. And again, I don't want to spoil anything out there, but it was just something that kind of bugged me.
So what you're saying is he should have been fired, right?
Probably.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess so.
Marty, this is a very good point. I wrestled with that very question, but I could not think about an alternative to it, because it had to be public. It had to involve that particular character. And then again, these are novels, of course. I push the envelope, but I have when I teach my course in writing, I tell my students that you have to judge the book by a very tried and true, well-known literary yardstick that's called the give me a break factor. We authors are going to lose some people. I walk a tightrope, and I knew that was going to affect some people, especially attorneys, definitely prosecutors. But I thought the only way it would really work was to put it in a, and your listeners are probably not going to see this, understand it right now, but putting it in a private context, a civil suit would have worked. That would have been fine, but a prosecutor, no. But then on the other hand, all you have to do is, you know, follow the news and look at some of the what the prosecutors have done. It's even worse than that, and for their own aggrandizement, not for the to benefit a good cause. But I appreciate that. No. This is, I love hearing this. I like it when I get good news, but I like it when I hear bad news. I'll tell you a very fast story on that.
No, I don't mean it in a negative way. I'm just saying that it just kind of reverberated with me.
That's very important. I'll tell you the story very quickly. I was in California at a book signing. A woman in her, I think, 90s came up to me afterwards and said, "Mr. Deaver, we have a book club at the retirement community next to the bookstore. We loved your book, but we something bothered us. And I want to talk to you about it." And I said, "Sure, I want to know." And she said, "It's about the violence in your books." And I said, okay. "And what exactly is the problem?" She said, "You're going soft on us. You're in the Bone Collector, you scalded that couple to death, and they had rats crawling all over that girl. In this book, you shot one person, stabbed another one, and they both lived, or they all lived. And we want you to get back to your roots." Well, I didn't expect that. I can't say, it's probably unfair to say, coming from an older reader who I would have thought would prefer a softer boiled approach to writing. But that told me that some readers like, you know, you can't give everything to everybody, but some readers like the violent scenes, and I'm not really a violent writer.
Well, with that, our time's running kind of short here, but I want to ask you, what's down the pike? What can we anticipate next from Jeffrey Deaver?
Sure. Another Lincoln Rhyme novel in 2023. Presently, I'm writing a Coulter Shaw story. And if I I'm not very technologically minded. I know there's a way to share screen. We're talking on Zoom right now. And I could show you the new book because it's kind of in the background because I'm writing on it. This is my radio tour day for the for my publisher, Putnam, talking about the book. But I'm hard at work at that after we close down our conversation. I'll let the dogs out. I have to do that. And then I'll get back to the next Colter Shaw book. And meanwhile, I do a lot of short stories. I love short fiction. And, you know, your listeners can go to jeffreydeaver.com and hit all the Jeffrey Deaver platforms, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, and you'll see what's coming up next.
Well, we're going to look forward to it. Everybody, the book is The Midnight Lock. It is a fabulous read. It brings us back to Lincoln Rhyme and Amelia Sachs and that whole gang. Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining us today. And with that, I will turn the page on this chapter of our podcast.
Thank you, Brian. It's great talking with you.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.